Welcome to NextGen Mentoring Forum. The NextGen Mentoring Forum series is to empower, educate, and illuminate individuals who are in or interested in the financial planning profession. At each forum, an expert will discuss a topic in the field of financial planning with the purpose of inspiring critical thoughts and discussion. In today's session, I have the honor to interview Eric Casatino on the topic of why you should consider using a trust company to manage your assets. My name is Dr. Jolly Jen. I am an assistant professor and director of financial planning program at California Lutheran University. I am a certified financial planner practitioner and maintain an active financial planning practice specializing in succession program management. I've authored 3 award-winning books, and I am very honored today to have Eric Casatino in our program today. Eric is a CTFA, a vice president and private wealth advisor with Finmark National Bank and Trust. Eric has nearly 30 years of experience in financial services industry, with half of that time in Southwest Florida. He works directly with clients to build and preserve their wealth and developing meaningful relationships in Lee and Collier counties. Eric holds a Bachelor of Arts from University of Massachusetts at Amherst and has earned the Certified Trust and Financial Advisors, or CTFA, designation. He also completed National Trust School at University of Chicago and the National Graduate Trust School at Northwestern University. Eric currently serves as a board member and volunteer for STAR, I believe it's called STAR Ability Foundation, a local nonprofit that provides education, vocation, and social services to individuals with disabilities. He also served as a treasurer and volunteer for Delnor Wiggins Pass State Park Community Service Organization. So welcome, Eric.
Thank you, Dr. Chien. Thank you for your time.
And before we actually get started, please help us know a little bit about you in terms of where you grew up and how did you become interested in the financial services industry?
Sure. Grew up in Boston, went to school in Boston, and started in the banking industry, working in the retail banking side. Did that for a few years, moved over to small business banking. From there, went to treasury management, and then finally went over to wealth management, working at State Street Bank and Trust Company. And I think at the time, State Street worked under the one officer system. So not only was I the trust officer, but I was also the portfolio manager. So that was a very invaluable experience doing that. And but for the last about 15 years, I've been strictly doing portfolio management. But if you ask one of my colleagues who's actually in the graduate program at Cal Lutheran University, she'll tell you that I'm still a trust and tax nerd. So
that's a good thing. Great for your clients.
Yeah.
So we know that in financial planning field, oftentimes estate planning, if you do a comprehensive plan for your client, estate planning oftentimes is part of this module that you always deliver. And most of the time when it's appropriate, we oftentimes recommend clients to set up trust for a variety of different reasons. But we rarely talk to the clients about who should be managing assets inside the trust for you, right? We know that we have to fund the trust, but we rarely talk about that conversation. So could you take us through what would be a reason for a client or advisor to recommend clients to use a trust company in terms of managing their assets?
Sure. So I would like to look at it from the perspective of, over the last 30 years, talking to a lot of prospective clients, wealth management firms in the US all seem alike. However, there's 3 common types of wealth management firms serving individuals in the US. And what I like to touch upon today are the types of firms, how they differ, how they're compensated, and what standards they're held to. So the three firms are broker-dealers, registered investment advisory firms, better known as RIAs, and trust companies. So if you want to go to the first slide, we can talk about broker-dealers. With a broker-dealer, one would be working with a registered representative. A broker-dealer performs two roles. They are a broker when they trade for a client and charge a commission, and a dealer when they trade for themselves. There are two types of broker-dealers, a wirehouse and an independent broker-dealer. A wirehouse is a full-service brokerage firm. The largest and most well-known are Morgan Stanley, Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, UBS, and Wells Fargo. Independent broker-dealers are your typical, discount or online brokerage firms like Fidelity Investments, Charles Schwab, TD Ameritrade, and E-Trade, for example. Broker-dealers are more transactional based. Their primary goal is to sell products that will help you reach your financial goals. While brokers may provide advice and consult with their clients, most of the work consists of buying and selling investment products. Broker-dealers, are regulated by the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, better known as FINRA. If you want to look at the next slide, registered investment advisor. With a registered investment advisor, one would be working with an individual or firm that offers financial advice to clients, including advice related to investment management, as well as a range of subjects that are part of, your financial life, from retirement planning to insurance to estate planning. An RIA can offer personalized advice based on your investment time horizon, risk tolerance, and liquidity needs. In the case of smaller independent RIAs, the representative is often, the owner or partner of the firm itself. For larger financial institutions, the RIA is most likely a subsidiary of a parent holding company. Many RIAs today are more likely to recommend a strategy of asset allocation to clients and leave the specific asset management decision to a third party. We've seen in recent years, the number of investment advisors engaged in this type of business have begun thinking of asset management outsourcing as a best practice, so they can focus on clients' other needs and not really managing money. RIAs are regulated by the Securities and Exchange Commission, better known as the SEC.
So let me kind of just stop for a moment to kind of explain the various different types. So they are broker-dealers that also are RIA. So that can be quite confusing. Sure. And within the RIA space, where only if the IRA firm has more than $100 million assets under management, they will register with SEC. If they are less than $100 million assets under management, they register with a particular state. So there are some differences there, but correct. You're right. If they are operating within the FINRA environment, that could be broker-dealer and that could be RIA, but there's also a different type of RIA. There are two different type of RIAs. One is the fee-only firm and the other one is a fee-based firm. And correct. So fee-based firm still operates within the FINRA environment. Fee-only firm does not. Mm-hmm. And so fee-only firm, they don't necessarily charge fee based on the assets. It really depending on what their business model is. So that really break it off to, you have your typical broker dealers or broker dealer combinations of broker dealer with the RIA fee based. Sometimes they call it the hybrid, or you have a strict RIA with a fee-only firm. So I'm sure from a consumer's perspective, it is already very confusing.
Yeah, exactly. So trust companies. So, with a trust company, one would typically be working with a trust officer and a portfolio manager. Trust companies are often a division of a commercial bank that can serve as an agent or trustee for a personal or business trust. Trust companies are focused on providing a variety of investment, retirement planning, and estate planning services for clients. A lot of people consider trust companies as a one-stop shop for individuals seeking trust administration, wealth management, and tax preparation services. At a trust company, we take a look at the entire financial picture, factoring goals of the client, and set a plan that will help the client achieve their goals. Trust companies do partner a lot with professionals like CPAs and estate planning attorneys to help clients, achieve their goals. Trust companies, unlike broker-dealers and RIAs, are regulated by the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, the OCC, which is a division of the Treasury Department. Now, getting back to, what you talked about, fees, each firm is differently compensated. Starting with broker-dealers, broker-dealers are typically compensated through commissions, front or back end loads and or fees. For full service broker will typically charge between 1 to 2% of the money involved in a trade. Your independent broker dealers, your discount or online brokers now basically charge zero for each trade. RIAs can generally charge clients annual fees equal to a percentage of assets under management, or they may choose to charge a fixed or hourly rate for their services. RIAs may also receive commissions from products they sell in addition to compensation from fees paid directly from clients. With trust companies, we usually receive our compensation through a fee, which is typically a percentage of assets under management. Trust companies do not sell financial products. Therefore, they are motivated to present the best options with low fees, tax efficiency, and other features that prioritize the client's needs and goals. Usually other services such as tax planning, charitable planning, retirement planning, and financial planning are included in trust company's asset under management fee.
So questions I have here is that up to this point, the trust company you described is also very similar to some of the fee-only RIA firms that I know of. Because most of the fee-only firms, or even fee-based firms, they also partner with CPAs firms. They also partner with attorneys. They also, in some fee-only firms or fee-based firm, they actually do have family office that could also manage some sort of trust administration as well. And so my question is that earlier you mentioned about the typical broker-dealers such as Bank of America and Wells Fargo and whatever, that take Bank of America as an example, they have US Trust, right?
Correct.
As one of the company under their umbrella. And so from an advisor's or from a client's perspective, in what situation does it make sense for us to actually recommend client to have a trust company to, and I guess the keywords on the screen, independently managing the assets under their trust. Could you give us some guidelines in terms of what will be the best situation for someone to be a good fit for a trust company?
It really depends on where you are in your life and the amount of assets you have. Also, depending on, and we're seeing a lot of second marriages now, is, you want a document that basically, a trust, which stipulates that how your assets are going to be managed during your lifetime, especially in case of your incapacity. So if you become incapacitated for any reason, who's going to manage your assets, for your lifetime. Also, for a trust, you want a firm that's, has a lot of experience managing assets for several generations. So upon your passing, the trust will dictate how your assets to be managed, whether to be distributed outright or continue for in trust for your children. So it really depends on where you are in your life, the complexity of the assets that you have, whether it's just not only, marketable securities, but life insurance, real estate, for example, closely held businesses, for example. A lot of trust companies have firms that look at oil and gas interests, mineral interests, for example, and, evaluate closely held businesses for their clients.
And so it almost sounds like a a family that are using the trust services has substantial assets. So I'm trying to think about when we work with clients, you're obviously a huge range. Someone could be less than $5 million client, you know, total net worth to mm-hmm. someone who might be hundreds of millions of dollars in assets net worth. So is a particular dollar amount or threshold mm-hmm. is ideal for a trust company to get involved?
Well, not necessarily. So, you know, for example, you know, even like with $1 million or $2 million, you know, depending on the family dynamics, you know, if, you know, God forbid that the parents pass away and there's three, you know, minor children, you know, a trust would dictate how the money is going to be spent for the, you know, children's health, maintenance, support, education, and whatnot. So I would not say that there's a set amount, dollar amount that should be there for you in order to have a trust. It really depends on your situation and your family dynamics,
and
as well as your assets.
So does that trust company has to be somehow named in the trust?
Yes.
So basically, how does it actually work?
So basically what will happen is, you know, you go to your estate planning attorney, you dictate how, you know, how the assets are going to be managed, you know, upon your passing. And then some people will put in the estate planning documents, you know, who they want to be their corporate trustee. Some people will leave it open where they'll let the, you know, personal representative or the trustee of the assets, you know, determine who they want to work with.
So this is actually a very interesting point where you mentioned about even when the assets are smaller, the trust company could still be beneficial for families. So
correct.
My question is that the benefits for a trust company is more of a third party independent point of view, interpreting what's in the trust document to manage the trust accordingly.
Right.
Now, I'm hoping that I'm interpreting that correctly. But if you have a family situation where, as you mentioned previously, if someone who has a very dynamic type of family situation where there's a first marriage, second marriage, or their children got involved, is that still a good idea to have a trust company doing the management, or is it still better for that particular family to have a family friend that they name as an executor to take care of it?
Well, the funny thing is, you know, people will initially say they'll, you know, they will be willing to be trustee, but there's always language in a trust that the family member or friend of the family can bow out if they're not willing to take on, you know, the responsibilities. And it is a lot of responsibility. In that case, you know, usually there is a corporate trust company that's in the document as a backup trustee. You know, we've seen recently that a lot of people don't want to deal with that responsibility of dealing with, you know, the kids, especially if the kids don't get along. It could be for a very, you know, difficult environment. Let's put it that way.
And so obviously you can put all these language within the trust, you know, mm-hmm. indicating that if you have a difficult family situation, then the trust company could do something and things like that. So my question is that oftentimes, and I don't know in the trust situation, oftentimes if it's a will, that they can be contested when someone passed away. A trust, you don't necessarily have that contesting a situation, but have you run into a situation that the very strange family members that wanted to contest what the trust language is? Have you run into a situation like that?
Yes. So there'd be situations in the past where, for example, say, you know, there's a family of three kids and say two of the kids have, you know, are responsible, you know, and you have one individual who's not responsible. And what will happen is, you know, upon, you know, the parents passing, you know, the two responsible kids receive their assets outright outside of a trust. And then the third child will receive it inside a trust because they're not responsible to take care of it themselves. And there's a corporate trustee that will manage the assets again for their health, maintenance, support, and education. And, you know, it causes a lot of friction within families, especially if the two other siblings are trustees of the third child's trust. So you'll see sometimes where a child will, you know, find an estate planning attorney, try to go to court to have the trust contested, to somehow, you know, receive the assets outright. That does happen once in a while, or change the language of the trust to make it more beneficial for them, where they have more access to the assets. Yeah, that does happen a lot.
So I guess the questions here would be for folks that's still alive, mm-hmm. that they probably need to have a discussion with the family members regarding about who does what in terms of the trust management. If they do choose to go to a trust company, do you encourage clients to do this before things happen? What is a typical kind of guidelines that you would direct the clients to do?
I mean, it depends. There's a lot of, we encourage clients to have the discussion with their kids about, you know, what assets are available. And, you know, but there's a lot of families that have kept their wealth, let's say, private, and their children are not aware of their wealth. And so I think the best bet is to, you know, have a discussion with them, you know, make them aware of, you know, the wealth that is available and, you know, what's going to happen upon their passing. You know, in some situations, it's best to have a trust company as just an independent third party managing it and not having any family members involved. If there's, you know, several, you know, kids involved and, you know, one sibling is going to be a trustee for another person's trust, you run into a lot of difficulties there sometimes.
So before we get into like the fee structure and all that, questions I have here is, so for, obviously every family is a bit different for how they want to choose a trust company. But in general, could you give us some ideas of how would a consumer or even an advisor provide sort of some sort of guidelines to pick the right trust company to work with? For example, your company, which is local company, has some national presence. So mm-hmm. should a client go to a local trust company or go to a national company like US Trust? What is your kind of recommendation and guidelines there?
Well, I mean, my recommendation is what we see is that what happens is historically, it's always been the husband that's managed the assets. And then when the husband passes, usually the surviving spouse comes in with a bunch of papers and says, help me with this. So my recommendation is to have a local trust company where you can actually meet with someone face to face, you know, whether it's on a quarterly basis or, you know, twice a year, that can help you, you know, work through things or, you know, answer questions, you know, regarding, you know, language in the trust or, you know, making discretionary distributions and whatnot. So my preference, especially for older clients, is to have a local trust company that you can meet with someone face to face.
And so the kind of a best practice would be working with a local trust company. So from an advisor's perspective, should the advisor kind of do their homework to come up with some local companies, local trust companies for the clients to pick and choose from? Or is there a directory that advisor can look up?
Well, I mean, the best place to start is like with the estate planning attorney. The estate planning attorneys, you know, work with several trust companies and they can tell you, you know, what they like about working with certain companies and what they dislike about working with other companies. So for advisors, I would probably talk to like either a CPA first or estate planning attorney to get some ideas of who may be suitable for their particular client.
Okay, so that's always a great idea. Go through the estate attorneys or CPA firms to kind of find out what are their recommendations before we kind of help the clients to understand what are those options.
And we do the same thing too. I mean, if a client comes to us, they move down from Ohio or something like that, and they have to redo their documents, you know, in the state of Florida, you know, there's several, you know, estate planning attorneys that will recommend to clients or CPAs down here. So, you know, it's, we have, you know, attorneys and CPAs and, you know, other resources that, you know, we currently recommend to clients that we worked with in the past and our clients have been happy with.
Mm, good. I'm glad to hear that. So let's walk through a very interesting situation and see what you could do with it.
Okay.
So I'll just use me as an example. So I know for sure that my husband has tortured me so many years. I'm going to go first, right? So I know that that's probably going to be the path. And I know that